So, you've returned to wearing black, have you, my dear?
Duke Roile helped Sereny into the carriage. Sereny looked down at her dress. It wasn't one that Ishane had sent her, but something she'd asked Shudan to bring up on one of his caravans through Duladel. Less full than most current trends in Aerilish fashion, it hugged tightly to her form. The soft velvet was embroidered with tiny silver patterns, and rather than a cape, it had a short mantle that covered her shoulders and upper arms.
It's actually blue, Your Grace. I never wear black.
Ah.
The older man was dressed in a white suit with a deep maroon undercoat. The outfit worked well with his carefully styled head of white hair. Sereny stared out at the dark streets of Kaye, her mood tolerant but unhappy. She couldn't, of course, refuse to attend the ball. Roile had agreed to throw it at her suggestion. However, she had made those plans a week ago, before events in Elantris. The last 3 days had been devoted to reflection. She had spent them trying to work through her feelings and reorganize her plans. She didn't want to bother with a night of frivolities, even if there was a point behind it.
You look ill at ease, Your Highness.
I haven't quite recovered from what happened the other day, Your Grace.
The day was rather overwhelming.
Then Roile leaned his head out the carriage's window. He checked the sky.
It's a beautiful night for our purposes.
It no longer mattered to her whether the eclipse would be visible or not. Ever since her tirade before Aedon, the entire court had begun to step lightly around her. Instead of growing angry as Kaiyan had predicted, Aedon simply avoided her. Whenever Sereny entered a room, heads turned away and eyes looked down. It was as if she were a monster, a vengeful Svrakis sent to torment them. The servants were no better. Where they had once been subservient, now they cringed. Her dinner had come late, and though the cook insisted it was because one of her serving women had suddenly run off, Sereny was certain it was simply because no one wanted to face the fearful princess's wrath. The entire situation was putting Sereny on edge.
All right, Sereny. That is enough.
Excuse me, Your Grace?
I said it's enough. By all reports, you've spent the last 3 days moping in your room. I don't care how emotionally disturbing that attack in Elantris was. You need to get over it. And quickly. We're almost to my mansion.
Excuse me?
Sereny, we didn't ask for your leadership. You wiggled your way in and seized control. Now that you've done so, you can't just leave us because of injured feelings. When you accept authority, you must be willing to take responsibility for it at all times. Even when you don't particularly feel like it.
I'm sorry.
Princess. We've come to rely on you so much in these last few weeks. You crept into our hearts and did what no one else, even myself, could have done. You unified us. Shudan and Eondel all but worship you. Lukel and Kaiyan stand by your side like two unmoving stones. I can barely unravel your delicate schemes, and even Ahane describes you as the most delightful young woman he's ever met. Don't leave us now. We need you.
Flushing slightly, Sereny shook her head as the carriage pulled up Roile's drive.
But what is left, Your Grace? Through no cleverness of my own, the Dorethi Gion has been neutralized, and it appears that Aedon has been quelled. It seems to me that the time of danger is past.
Perhaps. But Aedon is more clever than we usually credit. The king has some overwhelming blind spots, but he was capable enough to seize control 10 years ago, and he has kept the aristocracy at one another's throats all this time. And as for the Gion...
Roile looked out the carriage window toward a vehicle pulling up next to them. Inside was a short man dressed completely in red. Sereny recognized the young Aeonic priest who had served as Raythan's assistant.
I think we may have traded Raythan for a foe of equal danger.
Him?
Sereny had seen the young man with Raythan, of course, even remarked on his apparent fervor. However, he could hardly be as dangerous as the calculating Giorn.
I've been watching that one. His name is Dilaf. He's Aerilish, which means he was probably raised Karathi. I've noticed that those who turn away from a faith are often more hateful toward it than any outsider could be.
You might be right, Your Grace. We'll have to change our plans. We can't deal with this one the same way we did with Freyfin.
Ha ha ha! That's the girl I remember. Come, it wouldn't do for me to be late to my own party.
Roile had decided to have the Eclipse observation party on the grounds behind his house, an action necessitated by the relative modesty of his home. For the third richest man in Aerilon, the Duke was remarkably frugal.
I've only been a Duke for 10 years, Serini, but I've been a businessman all my life. You don't make money by being wasteful. The house suits me. I fear I'd get lost in anything larger.
The grounds surrounding the home, however, were extensive. A luxury, Roile admitted, was a bit extravagant. The Duke was a lover of gardens, and he spent more time outside wandering his grounds than he did in his house. Fortunately, the weather had decided to comply with the Duke's plans, providing a warm breeze from the south and a completely cloudless sky. Stars spattered the sky like specks of paint on a black canvas, and Serini found her eyes tracing the constellations of all the major aeons. Rayo shone directly overhead, a large square with 4 circles at its sides and a dot in the center. Her own aeon, Eni, crouched barely visible on the horizon. The full moon rose ponderously toward its zenith. In just a few hours, it would vanish completely. Or at least, that was what the astronomers claimed. Roile and Serini walked through the crowd, their arms linked.
So, are you going to tell me what this is all about?
What's all about?
The ball. You can't claim that you had me organize it on a whim. You were much too specific about the date and location. What are you planning?
Serini smiled, rekindling the night's schemes. She had nearly forgotten about the party, but the more she considered it, the more excited she became. Before this night was over, she hoped to find the answer to a problem that had been bothering her, almost since she arrived in Aerilon.
Let's just say I wanted to view the eclipse with company.
Ah, Serena, ever dramatic. You've missed your calling in life, my dear. You should have been an actress.
As a matter of fact, I considered it once. Of course, I was 11 years old at the time. A troupe of players came through Teod. After watching them, I informed my parents that I had decided not to grow up to be a princess, but an actress instead.
Ha ha ha! I would like to have seen old Evan Teo's face when his prized daughter told him she wanted to become a traveling performer.
You know my father.
I've had 2 audiences with your father, and both times he mocked my wardrobe.
He's merciless with visiting merchants.
Roile's grounds centered around a large courtyard-like patch of grass, overlaid by a wooden dancing pavilion. Hedge-walled pathways led away from the pavilion toward newly blooming flower beds, bridge-covered ponds, and sculpture displays. Torches lined the pavilion, providing full illumination. These would, of course, be doused prior to the eclipse. However, if things went as Serini planned, she wouldn't be there to see it.
The king! Is he here?
Of course.
Roile pointed toward an enclosed sculpture garden to one side of the pavilion. Serini could barely make out the form of Aedon inside, Ishane at his side. Serini relaxed. Aedon was the whole point of the night's activities. Of course, the king's pride wouldn't let him miss a ball thrown by one of his dukes. If he had attended Telrai's party, he would certainly make it to Roile's.
What could the king have to do with little Serini's schemes? Maybe she sent someone to peruse his chambers while he's away. A seon, perhaps?
However, at that moment, Aishi floated into view a short distance away. Serini shot Roile a sly look.
All right. Perhaps it wasn't the seon. That would be too obvious anyway.
My lady.
What did you find out?
The cook did indeed lose a serving woman this afternoon, my lady. They claim she ran off to be with her brother, who was recently moved to one of the king's provincial mansions. One, however, swears he hadn't seen anything of her.
Serini frowned. Perhaps she had been too quick in judging the cook and her minions.
I'm right. Good work.
What was that about?
Nothing.
Roal, however, nodded knowingly. The problem with being clever is that everyone assumes you're always planning something.
Ishi, I want you to keep an eye on the king. He'll probably spend most of his time in his exclusive portion of the party. If he decides to move, tell me immediately.
Yes, my lady.
Ishi hovered away to take an unobtrusive place next to one of the torches, where the flame's light masked his own. Roal nodded again. He was obviously having a delightful time trying to decipher Serini's plans.
So, do you feel like joining the king's private gathering?
No. As much good as it would do me to watch Aedon squirm in your presence, I've never approved of the way he holds himself aloof. I'm the host, thanks to you, and a host should mingle. Besides, being around Aedon tonight will be intolerable. He's looking for someone to replace Baron Edain, and every minor noble at the party will make a play for the title.
As you wish.
Serini allowed Roal to lead her toward the open-walled pavilion, where a group of musicians was playing, and some couples were dancing, though most stood talking at the perimeter. Serini followed Roal's gaze. Shudin and Torine spun near the center of the dance floor, completely captivated by one another.
What are you laughing about?
It is one of the great joys of my old age to see young men proven hypocrites. After all those years swearing that he would never let himself be caught. After endless balls spent complaining when women fawned over him. His heart and his mind have turned to mush as surely as any other man's.
You're a mean old man, Your Grace.
And that is the way it should be. Mean young men are trivial, and kindly old men are boring. Here, let me get us something to drink.
The Duke wandered away, and Serini was left watching the young couple dance. The look in Shudin's eyes was so sickeningly dreamy that she had to turn away. Perhaps Deora's words had been more accurate than Serini had been willing to admit. Serini was jealous, though not because she had assumed any romantic possibilities with Shudin. However, since her arrival in Aerilon, Shudin had been one of her most fervent supporters. It was hard to watch him giving his attention to another woman, even for a completely different purpose. There was another reason as well, a deeper, more honest reason. She was jealous of that look in Shudin's eyes. She was envious of his opportunity to court, to fall in love, and to be swept up in the stupefying joy of romance. They were ideals Serini had dreamed about since early adolescence. As she grew older, Serini realized that such things would never be hers. She had rebelled at first, cursing her offensive personality. She knew she intimidated the court's men, and so for a short while, she had forced herself to adopt a more subservient, docile temperament. Her engagement and near marriage to a young count named Graio had been the result. She still remembered the man, more a boy, with pity. Only Graio had been willing to take a chance on the new, even-tempered Serini, risking the mockery of his peers. The union had not been one of love, but she had liked Graio despite his weak will. There had been a kind of childish hesitancy about him, an overdone compulsion to do what was right, to succeed in a world where most people understood things much better than he. In the end, she had broken off the engagement, not because she knew living with a dull-minded Graio would have driven her mad, but because she had realized that she was being unfair. She had taken advantage of Graio's simple ingenuousness, knowing full well he was getting himself into something far over his head. It was better he bear the scorn of being refused at the last moment than live the rest of his life with a woman who would stifle him. The decision had sealed her fate as an unmarried spinster. Rumors spread that she had led Graio on simply to make a fool out of him, and the embarrassed young man had left the court, living the next 3 years holed up on his lands like a hermit. After that, no man had dared court the king's daughter. She'd fled Teod at that point, immersing herself in her father's diplomatic corps. She served as an envoy in all the major cities of Opelon, from Fjordan itself to the Svordish capital of Serevan. The prospect of going to Aerilon had intrigued her, of course, but her father had remained adamant about his prohibition. He barely allowed spies into the country, let alone his only daughter. Still, she had made it eventually. It was worth it, she decided. Her engagement to Raoden had been a good idea, no matter how horribly it had turned out. For a while, when they had been exchanging letters, she had allowed herself to hope again. The promise had eventually been crushed, but she still had the memory of that hope. It was more than she had ever expected to obtain.
You look as if your best friend just died.
Roile returned to hand her a cup of blue Jeodorian wine.
No, just my husband.
Perhaps we should move somewhere else. A place where we won't have such a clear view of our young baron's rapture.
A wonderful suggestion, Your Grace.
They moved along the pavilion's outer border. Serini strolled along at the elderly man's side, growing increasingly confused at the dark looks she occasionally got from noblewomen they passed. It was a few minutes before she realized the reason behind the hostility. She had completely forgotten Roile's status as the most marriageable man in Aerilon. Many of the women had come this night, expecting the Duke to be unaccompanied. They had probably planned long and hard on how to corner the old man, intent on currying his favor. Serini had ruined any chance of that.
You've figured it out then, haven't you?
This is why you never throw parties, isn't it?
As difficult as it is to deal with them at another man's ball, it is nearly impossible to be a good host with those vixens nipping at my hide.
Be careful, Your Grace. Shuden complained about exactly the same sort of thing the first time he took me to a ball. And look where he ended up.
Shuden went about it the wrong way. He just ran away. And everyone knows that no matter how hard you run, there's always going to be someone faster. I, on the other hand, don't run. I find far too much enjoyment in playing with their greedy little minds.
You're absolutely atrocious!
Now there's a mismatched couple if I've ever seen one.
Lukel bowed to the Duke.
What? A crusty old Duke and his lovely young companion?
I was referring more to the height difference, Your Grace.
Roile glanced up with a raised eyebrow. Serini stood a full head taller than him.
At my age, you take what you can get.
I think that's true no matter what your age, Your Grace.
Lukel looked down at his pretty black-eyed wife.
We just have to accept whatever the women decide to allot us and count ourselves blessed for the offering.
Serini felt sick. First Shuden, now Lukel. She was definitely not in the mood to deal with happy couples this night. Roile sensed her disposition.
If you'll excuse me, I absolutely must check on the food over near the pavilion.
Lukel bowed again, and then he and his wife turned back to their dancing, as Roile led Serini out of the lighted pavilion and back under the darkened sky and flickering torchlight.
You're going to need to get over that, Serini. You can't go running every time you meet someone with a stable relationship.
I don't always get this way, Your Grace. I've just had a difficult week. Give me a few more days, and I'll be back to my regular stone-hearted self.
Sensing her bitterness, Roile wisely decided not to respond to that particular remark. Instead, he glanced to the side. Duke Telrai had apparently decided not to join the king's private section of the party. Quite the opposite, in fact. He stood entertaining a large group of noblemen in a small hedged courtyard opposite the pavilion of Iadon's private gathering. It was almost as if he were starting his own exclusive sub-party.
Not a good sign.
Agreed.
Serini did a quick count of Telrai's fauners, trying to distinguish rank, then glanced back toward Iadon's section of the party. Their numbers were about equal, but Iadon seemed to command more important nobility. For the moment.
It's another unforeseen effect of your tirade before the king. The more unstable Iadon becomes, the more tempting other options appear.
Serini frowned. Telrai did not look at all like a man whose most important supporter, Giorn Hraithen, had just fallen.
What is he planning? How could he take the throne now?
Roile just shook his head.
Yes?
Serini turned as Aishi approached. Then, with astonishment, she realized it wasn't Aishi. It was a different Saeon.
The gardeners report that one of your guests has fallen into the pond, my lord.
Who?
Lord Redeem, Your Grace. It appears the wine proved too much for him.
Serini squinted, searching deep into the ball of light and trying to make out the glowing Aeon. She thought it was Ope.
He probably scared the fish right out of the pond. Thank you, Ope. Make sure that Redeem is given some towels and a ride home if he needs it. Next time, maybe he won't mix ponds with alcohol.
The Seon bobbed formally once more, then floated away to do his master's bidding.
You never told me you had a Seon, my lord.
Well, many of the nobles do, princess. But it is no longer fashionable to bring them along with us wherever we go. Seons are reminders of Elantris.
So he just stays here at your house?
Yes. Ope oversees the gardeners of my estate. I think it fitting, after all. His name does mean flower.
Serene tapped her cheek, wondering about the stern formality in Ope's voice. The Seons she knew back in Teod were much warmer with their masters, no matter what their personality. Perhaps it was because here, in the presumed land of their creation, Seons were now regarded with suspicion and dislike.
Come!
Erlyle took her arm.
I was serious when I said I wanted to check on the serving tables.
Serene allowed herself to be led away.
I'm astounded! You actually know how to throw a party! I was afraid you'd try and cram us all into that box you call a house!
Ehane, I should have realized I'd find you next to the food.
The large count was draped in a yellow robe and clutched a plate full of crackers and shellfish. His wife's plate, however, held only a few slices of fruit. During the weeks Siaden had been attending Serene's fencing lessons, she had lost considerable weight.
Of course! Best part of the party!
Then he nodded to Serene.
Your Highness, I'd warn you not to let this old scoundrel corrupt you. But I'm just as worried about you doing the same to him.
Me? What danger could I be?
Ask the king. Actually, you can ask me. Just look what you're doing to my poor wife. She refuses to eat.
I'm enjoying my fruit, Ehane. I think you should try some of it.
Maybe I'll try a plate of it after I'm done here. You see what you're doing, Serene. I would never have agreed to this fencing thing if I had known how it would ruin my wife's figure.
Ruin?
I'm from southern Aerilon, princess. To us, round is beautiful. Not everyone wants their women to look like starving schoolboys. No offense intended, of course.
Serene frowned. Ehane really was a delightful man, but he often spoke and acted without thought. Unsure how to properly respond, Serene hesitated. The wonderful Duke Roile came to her rescue.
Well, Ehane, we have to keep moving. I have a lot of guests to greet. Oh, by the way, you might want to tell your caravan to hurry.
Ehane looked up as Roile began to lead Serene off.
Caravan? What caravan?
Why, the one you have carrying sour melons from Dúladel to Svorden, of course. I sent a shipment of them myself a week ago. It should be arriving tomorrow morning. I'm afraid, my friend, that your caravan will arrive to a saturated market. Not to mention the fact that your melons will be slightly overripe.
How in the name of Domai did you manage that?
Oh, didn't you know? I was a half-partner in young Lukel's venture. I got all the unripened fruit from his shipment last week. They should be ready by the time they hit Svorden.
You've got me again, Roile. But just you watch. One of these days, I'm finally going to get the better of you, and you'll be so surprised that you won't be able to look at yourself for a week.
I look forward to it.
Roile led Serene away from the serving tables behind them.
You really are as good a businessman as they say, aren't you?
Yes, every bit as good. However, that young cousin of yours put me to shame. I have no idea how he kept that sour melon shipment a secret. My Dúladan agents are supposed to inform me of such things. I only got in on the deal because Lukel came to me for capital.
Then it's a good thing he didn't go to Ehane instead.
A good thing indeed. I would never hear the end of it if he had. Ehane's been trying to best me for 2 decades now. One of these days he's going to realize I only act brilliant to keep him off balance. And then life isn't going to be half as entertaining.
The two of them continued to walk, speaking with guests and enjoying Roile's excellent gardens. The early blooming flower beds were cleverly lit with torchlight, lanterns, and even candles. Most impressive were the crosswood trees, whose branches, leafed with pink and white blossoms, were lit from behind by lanterns running up the trunks. Serene was enjoying herself so much that she almost lost track of time. Only Aishi's sudden appearance reminded her of the night's true purpose.
My lady, the king is leaving the party.
Are you certain?
Yes, my lady. He left furtively, claiming he needed to use the privy, but he called his carriage instead.
Excuse me, your grace. I must be going.
Serini started walking back towards the house.
Serini! Serini, you can't go!
I apologize, your grace, but this is important.
Roile tried to follow her, but her legs were longer. In addition, the Duke had a party to attend. He couldn't just disappear in the middle of it. Serini rounded the side of Roile's house in time to see the king climbing into his carriage.
Domai!
Why hadn't she thought to arrange transportation of her own? She looked around frantically, searching for a vehicle to requisition. She picked a likely candidate as the king's carriage pulled away.
My lady, the king is not in that carriage.
What?
He slipped out the other side and disappeared into the shadows on the far side of the driveway. The carriage is a ruse.
Serini didn't bother to question the Seon. His senses were much more acute than those of a human.
Let's go. I'm not dressed for sneaking. You'll have to keep watch on him and tell me where he goes.
Yes, my lady.
Aishi dimmed his light to a nearly imperceptible level and flew off after the king. Serini followed at a slower pace. They continued in that manner, Aishi staying close to the king and Serini following at a less conspicuous distance. They covered the ground surrounding Roile's mansion quickly, then moved into the city of Kei. Aedon moved strictly through alleys, and Serini realized for the first time that she might be putting herself in danger. Women didn't travel alone after dark, even in Kei, which was one of the safest cities in Opelon. She considered turning back a half dozen times. However, she kept going. She was only going to get one chance to find out what Aedon was up to, and her curiosity was stronger than her fear, for the moment at least.
My lady, perhaps it would be wise if I continued to follow the king alone. This is getting far too dangerous.
Hush, Aishi! Do you want to give us away?
The Seon, accustomed to Serini's ways, gave no further argument. He flitted back and forth between her and the king, doing his best to keep watch over Serini, while at the same time following Aedon. Eventually, the Seon slowed, returning to Serini with an apprehensive bob.
He just entered the sewers, my lady.
The sewers?
Yes, my lady. And he is not alone. He met two cloaked men just after he left the party and was joined by half a dozen more at the mouth of the sewers.
And you didn't follow them in? We'll never be able to tail them.
Oh, that's unfortunate, my lady.
They'll leave tracks in the muck. You should be able to follow them.
My lady, I must insist that you return to the Duke's party.
Not a chance, Aishi.
I have the solemn duty of your protection, my lady. Can't allow you to go climbing through refuse in the middle of the night. I was wrong to let you go this far. It is my responsibility to stop this before it goes any further.
And how will you do that?
I could call your father.
Father lives in Teod, Aishi. What is he going to do?
I could go to Lord Eondale or one of the others.
And leave me to get lost in the sewers on my own?
You would never do something that foolish, my lady.
Then he paused, hovering uncertainly in the air, his Aeon so dim it was translucent.
Oh, right, you are indeed that foolish.
Come on, the fresher those tracks are, the easier it'll be for you to follow them.
The Seon sullenly led the way down the street, which soon ended in a dirty, fungus-lined arch. Serini strode forward with determination, paying no heed to the damage the sludge would do to her dress. The moonlight lasted only as far as the first turnoff. Serini stood for a moment in the suffocating, dank blackness, realizing that even she would never have been foolish enough to enter the directionless maze without guidance. Fortunately, her bluff had convinced Aishi, though she wasn't sure whether or not to be offended by the level of arrogant idiocy of which he thought her capable. Aishi increased his light slightly. The sewer was a hollow tube, a remnant of the days when Elantris's magic provided running water for every house in Kei. Now the sewers were used as a receptacle for trash and excrement. They were flushed out by a periodic diversion of the Eredil, something which obviously hadn't been done in a while, for the wet muck at the bottom of the corridor came up to her ankles. She didn't want to consider what the sludge must be composed of, but the pungent stink was an overpowering clue. All of the tunnels looked the same to Serini. One thing reassured her: the Seon's sense of direction. It was impossible to get lost when accompanied by Eishi. The creatures always knew where they were and could point the exact direction to any place they had ever been. Eishi led the way, floating close to the muck's surface.
My lady, may I be allowed to know just how you knew the king would sneak away from Roile's party?
Surely you can figure it out, Eishi.
Let me assure you, my lady, I have tried.
Well, what day of the week is it?
Maedal.
Right. And what happens every week on Maedal?
Your father plays Sindar with Lord Eodin.
No. Every week on Maedal at 11 o'clock, I hear scrapings in the passage that runs through my wall, the one that leads to the king's rooms. I heard noises in the passage some other nights as well, but Maedal was the only consistent day.
So you had Roile throw a party tonight, expecting that the king would keep to his schedule.
Right. And I had to make it a late party so that people would stay at least until midnight. The eclipse provided a convenient excuse. The king had to come to the party. His bride wouldn't let him stay away. However, his weekly appointment must be important, for he risked leaving early to attend it.
My lady, I don't like this. What good could the king be doing in the sewers at midnight?
That is exactly what I intend to find out.
One thought drove her through muck and darkness, a possibility she was barely willing to acknowledge. Perhaps Prince Raodin lived. Maybe Aedon hadn't confined him to the dungeons, but in the sewers. Serini might not be a widow after all.
Shh! Turn down your light, Eishi. I think I hear voices.
There was an intersection just ahead, and torchlight flickered from the rightmost tunnel. Serini approached the corner slowly, intending to peek around it. Unfortunately, she hadn't noticed that the floor declined slightly just before the intersection. She waved desperate arms, barely stabilizing herself as she slid a few feet down the incline and came to a halt at the bottom. The motion placed her directly in the middle of the intersection. Serini looked up slowly. King Aedon stared back, looking as stunned as she felt.
You!
The king stood facing her behind an altar, a red-streaked knife raised in his hand. He was completely naked, except for the blood smearing his chest. The remains of an eviscerated young woman lay tied to the altar, her torso sliced open from neck to crotch. The knife dropped from Aedon's hand. Only then did Serini notice the dozen black-robed forms standing behind him, Duladin runes sewn into their clothing. Each one carried a long dagger. Several approached her with quick steps. Serini wavered between her body's urge to retch and her mind's insistence that she scream. The figures rushed for her, their cowled eyes intent. Serini tried to regain her feet. She almost missed the sounds of footsteps from her right. Then Eondel was there. The aged general's sword flashed in the dim light, cleanly slicing off an arm that was reaching for Serini's ankle. Other figures moved through the corridor as well, men in the livery of Eondel's legion. There was also a man in a red robe, Delok, the Dorethi priest. He didn't join the fighting, but stood to the side with a fascinated look on his face, dumbfounded. Serini tried to stand again, but only ended up slipping in the sewage once more. A hand grabbed her arm, helping her up. Roile's wrinkled face smiled in relief as he pulled Serini to her feet.
Maybe next time you'll tell me what you are planning, princess.
You told him!
Serini shot Eishi an accusatory look.
Of course I told him, my lady.
The Seon pulsed slightly to punctuate the remark. She sat in Roile's study with Eishi and Lukel. Serini wore a robe that the Duke had borrowed from one of his maids. It was too short, of course, but it was better than a sewage-covered velvet dress.
When?
He called Ope as soon as you left my drive.
Roile walked into the room, carrying three steaming cups. He handed one to her and another to Lukel before taking a seat.
That soon?
I knew you would never turn back, no matter what I said.
You know me too well.
I will admit to that failing without argument, my lady.
Then why did you try and stop me before leading me into the sewer?
I was stalling, my lady. The Duke insisted on coming himself, and his group moved slowly.
I might be slow, but I was not going to miss whatever you had planned, Sereni. They say age brings wisdom, but it only gave me a torturous case of curiosity.
Eondel's soldiers?
We're already at the party. He had insisted on knowing what had happened as soon as he saw Sereni sneaking into Roile's house, covered in slime.
I saw some of them mingling with the guests.
I invited Eondel's officers, or at least the half dozen of them that were in town.
All right, so after I ran off, Aeshi called Yoseon and told you I was pursuing the king.
The foolish girl is going off to get herself killed, were his exact words.
Aeshi?
I apologize, my lady. I was rather out of sorts.
Anyway, Aeshi called Roile, and he gathered Eondel and his men from the party. You all followed me to the sewers, where you had your Seon guide you.
Until Eondel heard you screaming. You were a very lucky lady to have that man's loyalty, Sereni.
I know. That's the second time this week his sword has proved useful. Next time I see Iaedon, remind me to kick him for convincing the nobility that military training is beneath them.
You might have to stand in line to do that kicking, Princess. I doubt the city's priests, Dorethi or Carathi, will let the king get away with taking part in the Yaskeri mysteries.
And sacrificing that poor woman.
The tone of the conversation grew subdued as they remembered just what they were discussing. Sereni shuddered at the image of the blood-covered altar and its occupant.
Aeshi's right. This is no time for joking.
That's what it was, then.
The mysteries sometimes involve sacrifices. Iaedon must have wanted something very badly.
A Dorethi friend claimed to have some knowledge on the subject. He seemed to think the king was petitioning the Yesker spirits to destroy someone for him.
Me?
Arteth Dilaf said the instructions were written on the altar in that woman's blood.
Well, at least now we know what happened to the maids and cooks who disappeared from the palace.
Yes. I guess he's been involved with the mysteries for a long time. Perhaps even since the Riod. He was obviously the leader of that particular band.
The others?
Minor nobles. Iaedon wouldn't have involved anyone who could challenge him.
Wait a moment. Where did that Dorethi priest come from, anyway?
That's my fault. He saw me gathering Eondel's men. I was kind of in a hurry, and he followed us. We didn't have time to deal with him.
Sereni sipped at her drink petulantly. The night's events definitely hadn't turned out as she had planned. Suddenly, Ahane waddled through the door.
Ragdomai, Sereni! First you oppose the king, then you rescue him, and now you dethrone him! Would you please make up your mind?
Sereni pulled her knees up against her chest and dropped her head between them.
Ugh. There's no chance of keeping it undercover, then.
No, the Dorethi priest saw to that. He's already announced it to half of the city.
Tel Rai will almost certainly seize power now.
Where is Eondel?
Locking the king in the jailhouse.
And Shuden?
Still seeing that the women get home safely, I assume.
All right, we'll have to proceed without them. Gentlemen, I'm afraid I just destroyed our brief respite of peace. We have some heavy planning to do, and most of it's going to be in the way of damage control.
Something changed. Braithen blinked, washing away the last remnants of his waking dream. He wasn't sure how much time had passed. It was dark now, hauntingly black, save for a few lonely torches burning high above on Elantris's wall. There wasn't even any moonlight. He fell into the stupor more and more often lately, his mind fuzzing as he knelt in the same penitent stance. 3 days was a long time to spend in prayer. He was thirsty, hungry as well. He had expected that. He had fasted before. However, this time seemed different. His hunger seemed more urgent, as if his body were trying to warn him of something. Elantris had much to do with his discomfort, he knew. There was a desperation about the town, a sense of anxiety in every vile, cracking stone. Suddenly, light appeared in the sky. Hraithen looked up with awe, blinking tired eyes. The moon slowly appeared from darkness, first a scythe-shaped sliver, It grew even as Hraithen watched. He hadn't realized that there would be a lunar eclipse this night. He had stopped paying attention to such things since he left Dúladel. That nation's now extinct pagan religion had ascribed special importance to the heavens' movements, and the mysteries often practiced their rituals on such nights. Squatting in the courtyard of Elantris, Hraithen finally understood what had prodded the Yeskers to regard nature with religious wonder. There was something beautiful about the pale-faced goddess of the heavens, a mysticism to her eclipse. It was as if she really were disappearing for a time, traveling to another place, as opposed to just falling into the planet's shadow, as Svartish scientists now claimed. Hraithen could almost feel her magic. Almost. He could understand how, perhaps, a primitive culture could worship the moon, but he could not take part in that worship. Yet he wondered, was this the awe he should feel for his god? Was his own belief flawed because he did not regard Yadith with the same mixture of curious fear and wonder with which such people of Yesker had regarded the moon? He would never have such emotions. He was not capable of irrational veneration. He understood, even if he envied men who could gush praises to a god without understanding his teachings, Hraithen could not separate fact and religion. Yadith bestowed attributes on men as he saw fit, and Hraithen had been given a logical intellect. He would never be content with simple-minded devotion. It was not what Hraithen had been hoping for, but it was an answer, and he found comfort and strength within it. He was not a zealot. He would never be a man of extreme passion. In the end, he followed Dorethi because it made sense. That would have to be enough. Hraithen didn't know how long it would be until he left Elantris. His exile could last days yet. He hadn't wanted to show signs of physical dependence, but he knew that he would need some nourishment. Reaching over, he retrieved his sacrificial basket. Caked with slime, the offerings were growing stale and moldy. Hraithen ate them anyway, resolve breaking as he finally made the decision to eat. He devoured it all. At the end, he downed the entire flask of wine. He tossed the basket aside. At least now, he wouldn't have to worry about scavengers coming to steal his offerings, though he hadn't seen any more of them since the earlier attack. He was thankful to Yadith for the respite. He was becoming so weak and dehydrated that he might not have been able to fend off another assault. The moon was almost completely visible now. Hraithen stared up with renewed resolve. He might lack passion, but he had an ample serving of determination. He licked his now wetted lips.
Oh, Yadith, Lord of our creation.
Hraithen would continue as he always had, doing his best to serve in Lord Yadith's empire. There was nothing else God could expect of him.
Restore me to life. I implore you.
Elantris Part 2 is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2005 by Brandon Sanderson. All rights reserved. Recorded with the permission of the Authrow and Dragonsteel Entertainment, LLC. Production copyright 2009 by The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. With performances by Danny Gavigan, Lily Beacon, Richard Rowan, David Coyne, Tony Penny, Jason Stiles, Thomas Simpson, Tony Nam, Elizabeth Jernigan, Kate Foster, Tim Getman, Sherry Simpson, Mary McGowan, Casey Platt, Jonathan Watkins, Michael Glenn, Eric Messner, Colleen Delaney, Susan Linsky, Mort Shelby, Terrence Aselford, Nanette Savard, Scott McCormick, Andy Clements, James Lewis, Stephen Carpenter, Christopher Graybill, Ken Jackson, and Dylan Lynch. Adapted for graphic audio and directed by Johann Detweiler. Produced by Richard Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. dialogue editing, and graphic audio sound design by Johann Detweiler. Featuring original music composed and performed by Dan Smith and Johann Detweiler. If you've enjoyed Elantris, be sure to look for R.A. Salvatore's Demon Wars Saga. Available now in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net. Keep listening for exciting previews of other graphic audio productions.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
Bunny, I'm so sorry.
You don't know what they did to her, my daughter.
We need everyone's best to get her out. Lieutenant Sweezer's best is very good, and it could save Brunn's life.
They're talking as if she were just a game piece. Unless she's dead, she's planning on doing something. And if we don't know what, we're going to find our plans crossing hers.
What are we doing?
End of the line, girlies. I get more from them for turning you in than from you for taking you on.
Brunn? All right, then. Let's do it.
Oh!
Can you pilot?
Release. Yes. Start up. Drive on.
She's heading back. Is she gonna try to land on the planet?
No. She's heading for the orbital stuff. And I think we should go get her.
You would volunteer for such a mission?
Yes, sir.
Lieutenant, the artificial gravity's on.
It shouldn't be. The station's a derelict.
Team Blue.
Lieutenant Sweezer here.
Two shuttles approaching with unshielded transmissions. They're planning to go in and kill everyone they find. He's coming in with way too much relative V. Gonna knock this station sideways. Counting down. 3, 2...
Serrano Legacy, Book 5, Rules of Engagement, Part 2, from Graphic Audio.
I'm Kyle Rayner, commonly known as Green Lantern, and there's a story that goes with that. What am I supposed to do?
Wear the ring.
For how long?
Until you die, or something worse happens to you.
Shooting at me!
I'm here as a representative of the Justice League.
You've got like a club.
Something like that.
You screwed up badly tonight.
Do you remember the signaling device we gave you?
Where'd you find it?
On the floor.
I intend to know if you're responsible for the disappearance of the satellite.
Why do you think I might be?
You could be smarter than you seem.
Well, I'm not.
I was called Ganthet.
You're 500,000 years old?
If my brothers succeed, there will never have been life on Earth.
It's up to us to prevent the end of the universe?
Graphic Audio presents DC Comics Justice League of America, Green Lantern, Heroes Quest.
If we do not do it, it will not be done.
Copyright 2009, DC Comics, all rights reserved. Justice League of America, Green Lantern, and all related characters and elements are trademarks of DC Comics.
The demon dactyl came awake. It didn't seem such a momentous thing, just a gradual stirring in a deep cave in a far, empty mountain. An unnoticed event, seen by none save the caveworms and those few insomniacs among the bevy of weary bats hanging from the high ceiling. But the demon spirit had awakened, had come back from its long dormancy into the statue-like form it had left behind after its last visit to the world called Corona. The tangible, corporeal body felt good to the wandering spirit. The dactyl could feel its blood, hot blood, coursing through its wings and mighty legs, could feel the twitching of its mighty muscles. Its eyes flickered open, but saw only blackness, for the form, left standing in magical stasis in the deep cave, head bowed and wings wrapped tightly about its torso, had been covered by magma. Most of the fiery stuff of that time long past had bubbled and flowed away from the cavern, but enough had remained to harden about the dactyl's corporeal form. The spirit had come back to Corona, encased in obsidian. The demon's spirit felt deep within itself, summoned its powers, both physical and magical. By sheer will and brute strength, The dactyl flexed its wings. A thin crack ran down the center of the obsidian sarcophagus. The dactyl flexed again. It stretched its great wings out to the side, clawed tips grasping and rending the air. The dactyl threw back its head and opened wide its mouth. It voiced the sheer joy of its return, the anticipation of the chaos it would bring again to the quiet human kingdoms of Corona. Its torso resembled that of a tall, slender man, shaped and lined by corded strands of taut muscle and sporting a pair of tremendous bat-like wings, 20 feet across when fully extended, and with strength enough to lift a full-grown bull in swift flight. Its head, too, was somewhat human, except more angular, with a narrow jaw and pointed chin. The dactyl's ears were pointed as well, poking up about the demon creature's thin tuft of black hair. Neither did that hair hide the creature's horns, thumb-sized and curling in toward each other at the top of the demon's brow. The texture of its skin was rough and thick, an armored hide, reddish in hue and shiny, as if lit by its own inner glow. Shining, too, were the demon's eyes, pools of liquid black at most times, but shifting to fiery red orbs, living flames when the demon was agitated, a glow of absolute hatred. The creature flexed and stretched, extended its wings to their full glory, reached and clawed at the air with its human-like arms. The demon extended its fingernails, transformed them into hooked claws, and grew its teeth. Two pointed canines extending down over its bottom lip. Every part of the demon was a weapon, devastating and deadly. And yet, this demon's real strength lay in its mind and its purpose. The tempter of souls, the twister of hearts, the maker of lies.
How long has it been? How many decades, centuries have passed since my last visit to Corona?
The creature remembered that long ago time now, savored the thoughts of the streaming blood as army after army had joined in delicious, desperate battle. He saw again the elf who had rallied the humans and the other elves, Terranin Denonial, who chased the dactyl's armies back to the base of the mountain, Ada. Denonial himself had come into this cave after the beast, had skewered the dactyl. Yet even in its death throes, the dactyl had won the day, using its willpower to bring up the magma from the bowels of Ada. Denonial and much of his army had been consumed and destroyed.
I am eternal. I have returned. My physical wounds healed. What man, what elf will take Denonial's place?
Its thoughts turned from its enemies to those it would summon as minions. What creatures could the dactyl gather this time to wage its war?
The goblins, certainly, full of anger and greed, delighting in murder and war. The Formorian giants of the mountains, few in number, but each with the strength of a dozen men, and a hide too thick and tough for a dagger to puncture. And the Powries, yes, the Powries. The cunning, warlike dwarves of the Julianthes, the Weathered Isles, who hate the humans above all others.
A line of drool hung low from the dactyl's mouth, as it considered its former and future allies, its army of woe.
I will bring them into my fold, tribe by tribe, race by race, growing as the night grows when the sun touches the western horizon. Hear me, Corona. Your twilight is at hand. I
Ben awaits!
Graphic Audio proudly presents R.A. Salvatore's epic saga, The Demon Wars.
If you can't find that hot Graphic Audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.